Welcome to the Hamilton Spectator Newsroom Insider. I'm David Crosby. In December 2015, elementary school teacher Jake Hetty was riding his bicycle home from work up the Claremont Access. He was struck by a vehicle and killed. The driver of that truck was real estate agent Guy McPhee, who in July testified that he had stopped after hearing a bang and realizing he had hit something. He claimed he looked back and didn't see anything. Once home, he called the police to report that he had hit something. He was eventually arrested by police and charged in Ketty's death. In July of this year, McPhee was found guilty of careless driving by a justice of the peace. He was in court Friday for sentencing. I'm joined today by John Wells, who is at John Sapinka Courthouse today for the sentencing of Guy McPhee in the what was ruled a careless driving death.
Yes, that Jay Ketty was the victim, and Guy McPhee was convicted in July for careless driving that resulted in his death 2 years ago in December of 2015.
That's right. So just a quick refresher, Jay Ketty was the Hamilton elementary school teacher who was riding up the Claremont Access in early December 2015.
That's right. Yeah, he taught at Prince of Wales Elementary School. And that day, he had been stayed late at school to cheer on the girls' volleyball team playing in a state championship. He wasn't coaching or anything. He just that's the kind of guy he was. He wanted to stay back and cheer them on, and that put him at that spot on the Claremont Access at about 5:30 that evening. At the same time as Guy McPhee was driving up it as well, and. Which is one of those, the justice of the peace that was presiding over the sentencing, because it wasn't a criminal case. She talked about some of the random things that happened in life and during the day, and you know how these two sort of ended up at that spot that led to this tragedy. And anything can happen, I guess.
Guy was. Sentenced only to a fine and suspended license. Is that correct?
That's right. The Crown sought 90 days jail time. He could have received as much as 6 months jail time. The Crown argued for 90 days jail time and an 18 month driver's license suspension, but the Justice of the Peace agreed with the defense submissions and gave him no time at all in custody and in jail, no jail time. Gave him a $2,000 fine, which is the maximum in terms of the fine, and a 120-day driver's license suspension. Eileen Walker, the JOP, sided with the defense position that he'd be given maximum leniency, I suppose, apart from the fine, which was on the high end of the fine.
Why is this? That seems to me very a light sentence when somebody has lost their life. But you mentioned that the Crown was only seeking 90 days.
Yes, which I guess that goes towards the argument that even the Crown was suggesting he not receive the maximum. Because of the circumstances surrounding the case, and there was case law discussed in court, drivers who run red lights and distracted driving, texting while driving, causing death or killing more than one person, or different aspects that aggravate the sentence. So it's a good point. I mean, even the Crown was not asking for the maximum. She used the phrase. She said sort of the along the spectrum of punishment and severity, that this should be sort of mid to high is how she sort of described it, whereas the defense lawyer, Dean Paquette, said it was on the very far low end of the spectrum in terms of the severity of the circumstances surrounding the accident and the offender, in this case Guy McPhee, in terms of any previous convictions or his character and that sort of thing. And Paquette's position won out with the justice of the peace, certainly.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on Paquette's position then? If it was persuasive enough for the justice of the peace, I'm curious. I'm asking to you as a cyclist. knowing that this has been a very, very contentious case that people have been focused on here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And I know that there's going to be a lot of, there already has been some outcry to what someone would view, again, as sort of a light sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of that. You know, it's interesting. You go into it and the process of the sentencing, so you go into court and the Crown spoke first and the Jay Keddie's widow, Ingrid, gave her victim impact statement, and then their son, Alistair, gave his victim impact statement. It's a, you know, very emotional and the horrible thing, the loss they've suffered, and that sort of thing. And you're sort of sitting there thinking, wow, you know, this is, he's going to get the maximum sentence. This is mm-hmm. a terrible thing. He was riding his bike, lawfully riding his bike on the side of the road. There was no bike lanes, or sidewalk or anything, but he was allowed to be there. He was lawfully there.
Of course. Yeah.
And then Paquette gave his presentation, and Dean Paquette is a veteran defense lawyer in the city and has defended a wide variety of clients, and he is a pro. I mean, that's, you know, I have to say, just in terms of watching him work and present the case law and whatnot, he kept focusing on, you know, and it's an emotional issue. You're right. I mean, you know, a cyclist's life is taken. You know, a guy riding his bike, you know, no defense.
Yeah.
In terms of his being able to defend him, his physical space kind of thing on this bike. He was wearing a helmet, but I mean, he was crushed. I mean, you know, the severed brain stem and skull fractures and pelvic fractures. And I mean, he was struck so hard and died at the scene. Paquette tried to focus upon the specifics of the case and in terms of how it relates to sentencing. And we get into this area where, you know, there's the law and there's the sort of emotion that goes along with, well, how do we properly redress what happened to this, by all accounts, great guy who was cycling. And, you know, that in terms of the facts towards sentencing, you look at the offender and his circumstances, his life, his past record, his resume. And you look at the offense in terms of what he did that led to the death. This guy McPhee, they presented many letters in court from people in the community, but what a great guy he is. And even the Crown talked about how absolutely Guy McPhee is an upstanding citizen, mm-hmm. involved in the community, volunteer, very giving of his time and his money. He's a realtor, very, very giving of his resources and volunteering and all that sort of thing, and a great family man, all that sort of thing. No prior record. In terms of his driving, you know, the Crown did present his driving record, that he had some driving offenses in the past. But, you know, that his most recent driving conviction was, I think, 10 years ago. It was for driving 10 kilometers over the speed limit, several years ago. So very minor, and a previous conviction before that was 25 years ago, which the judge and Paquette said isn't relevant. That's so long ago that it has no bearing at all on the present. So there's that. So the offender, very much on that that far end of that spectrum in terms of how serious one should view him. And then the offense itself, which gets a little more problematic, I'm sure, in terms of the way people interpret it and what the Crown was talking about, that he's driving up the Claremont access, that the visibility is good. The sun is set, but the visibility is still good. He should have been able to see Jay Keddie and had opportunity to see him if he'd been paying attention from his testimony, certainly what was presented in court. He was doing shoulder checks and looking in his mirror in order to do a lane change to get off at West 5th. And according to the investigation, there was about a 300 meter stretch, almost about 20 seconds worth of driving, where he was in the same sort of lane as Jay Keddie, where he should have seen him. So there is this period of time where he should have noticed him, but he testified that he didn't see him ever. During that period of time, and that he struck him. But as Paquette pointed out, in terms of the evidence in court, he wasn't speeding. Mm-hmm. If anything, he was driving below the posted 70 kilometers an hour speed limit. It was a construction zone. So, I mean, in terms of the posted speed limit, I'm not sure how relevant that is. I mean, because everyone's probably driving a little bit differently given the construction. But who knows? But yeah. He wasn't speeding. He was driving slower than he had to be. He didn't run any red lights or his stop signs. he wasn't, there was no evidence, at least, that he engaged in distracted driving. You know, the Crown mentioned that he deleted a couple of cell phone calls from his cell phone later that night. Apparently, his wife had urged him to do that, so it wouldn't, you know, look like he'd been on his cell at the time that he hit Keddie. I asked Paquette about that after court later about that, her bringing that up, because the judge sort of dismissed the cell phone evidence, and he said if anything, it helped my client's case, because the two cell phone calls that were deleted from the phone that police restored show that he had talked on the phone, but well before and then well after the accident. So there was no evidence from the cell phone that he'd been talking on the phone at least at the time he hit Jay Keddie. Had he been doing something else on the phone at the time? Who knows what else might have happened? But it's based on the evidence. The evidence in court was he was not on the phone. That was not part of. That was not why he hit him. He wasn't distracted. And so Paquette painted this picture of this guy who hit him. He just didn't see him. He wasn't paying proper attention. He was checking other aspects of his ride. I suppose looking for cars, focused on just automobiles and not thinking at all. There could be a cyclist or something else. Wasn't being careful enough. Hence the conviction. And that, given all of that in the mix, that he wasn't deserving of, a severe penalty, jail time, and by the case law, in terms of what other people have been sentenced for, it didn't rise to that level. And the Justice of the Peace agreed with that. She gave the sentence that she did. And Keddie's wife and son, and I'm not sure if there's another family member or not, but they sort of strode from the room briskly. You know, they were upset. You could tell they didn't wait for court to be adjourned. They walked out of the room. They were angry and emotional. And it's not gonna satisfy a lot of people. That's for sure. There'll be anger.
And I absolutely understand all of the points you're raising that mm-hmm. Paquette raised. Brought up himself in court, but yeah. I'm still kind of hinging on this one point that stretch of the Claremont is a straight line. You know, mm-hmm. there are corners.
Right.
From what I understand, this was the middle bit, like you said, 200 or 300 meters.
Right.
I myself am just still having a hard time imagining
how he couldn't have seen him.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good point, and I don't know. I covered the sentencing today. I didn't cover. You know, there was. Several days of testimony in the case
back in July.
And I don't know if the Crown tried to hammer on that aspect in terms of what did you see. Often in any, this wasn't a criminal case per se, but in any case, whether like this, it's whatever can be proven in court. Why he didn't see him. I guess if no evidence was ever introduced, presumably that showed that he was doing something he shouldn't have been doing, or that he actually saw him and drove recklessly and struck him without meaning to, but you know what I mean, which would have aggravated the sentence, mm-hmm. The conditions surrounding the sentence. None of these things could have been proven in court. You have the police who reconstruct these things. It's quite amazing some of the technology they use in terms of even being able to pinpoint this stretch of road that he would have been, with Keddie on at the same time and the time he would have had to see him, much less recovering the cell phone things and all that sort of thing. But there's only so much they can do. In the end, it's what can be proven in court. And some of the unknowns about that, will never be known or proven, and that wasn't part of the equation for sentencing, I guess. But I came away from it just it's an empty kind of there's sort of no, as I was trying to think about what to write for the lead and so on. There's sort of no winners in a case like this. I mean, McPhee won't have to do jail time. He was. I didn't have space for it to work in the story. It's not related to the accident, but he was diagnosed with cancer, with prostate cancer, in the months following the accident, and so he's having cancer treatment. He had to miss some of the early court days because of treatments and this sort of thing. He didn't appear well to me walking outside the courtroom with his daughter. The family's all there. It's just a horrible thing all the way around, and you know, that there's just sort of no sense of redemption or retribution or justice for anybody. And it sure gets you, you know, when you so, you know, you leave the courthouse, you get in your car and you start driving, and it's just kind of like all of a sudden your antenna is up.
Yeah,
because you're just thinking about everything, you know. But and to that point, you know, the Justice of the Peace and the Crown both point out that one of the hopes they had about this case was that there'd be a sense of deterrence and awareness for drivers out there to pay proper attention to everyone sharing the road, and that, you know, no matter what sentence Guy McPhee received today, the case has been covered a lot in the local media, and so that awareness, you know, hopefully has percolated through the community, kind of thing. And whether he's doing a few months in jail or paying a fine, that remains, and hopefully that's part of the legacy of the case.
Yeah, no, I think that's an important thing to remember, or a way to frame this or consider this. Is, again, this was just the sentencing today, yeah. As you were saying, everything's sort of already been established.
Yeah, but you know, it's an interesting area of the law, and I'm certainly not well schooled in all these aspects. But you know, the way we await death, when someone causes another person's death, you know what I mean? If someone's at a bar and they get in a fight and they punch the person to death, well, then it can be a manslaughter charge. And there's, you know what I mean? There's this wide spectrum of cause and effect and responsibility and all that sort of thing. And I'm sure there'll be some people arguing that in this case that the balance is out of whack. So some will argue that. But in terms of the way the rules are set up, the Justice of the Peace, ruled according to that, according to the case law. And, you know, the Crown afterwards, you know, the Crowns never say much afterwards. And she just said, well, it's just, Nancy Flynn, she just said, well, it's just a tragic case. That's all I'll kind of say. She didn't appear outraged. There was no talk of appealing the sentence. Maybe that would happen automatically. I don't know. But I think she sort of understood the rules of the game as well. And that's the way it was played today, I guess.
I wonder then if this is maybe... Hopefully the legacy then can address societal issues around this, the way that people approach driving, the consideration that's given to cyclists, all people on the road, really.
I would hope so. I mean, you know, because when I think about it, and I'm trying to imagine him driving with the access, and I think a lot of times people, I think we're all guilty of it, when your gut instincts for checking things, your shoulder check, your instincts as you're driving is checking for cars, right? If you don't see a car, then you're good. And you're not thinking so much about pedestrians. And we've all come, I think, in a situation where all of a sudden someone crosses the road, you're kind of like, oh, I didn't see that person, mm-hmm. or something. Because it's a whole different mindset to be looking for smaller objects than just a car. And being aware of all of that and driving with that in mind, that's the context in your head. And even today with all the cyclists out there, and it's still not something that enough drivers do. Hopefully cases like this contribute towards changing that.
I agree. Thank you very much, John.
Thanks, David.